Well, I guess we might as well start, huh? And hey, Lynn. well, this is a session organized by Bob Donahue and myself on going, what's the title, Bob?
Pick it up.
Going beyond the impact question or something. We don't go beyond the impact question, but we're hoping that you will be able to help us to go beyond the impact question. And in fact, a good subtitle for this session would have been Web Metrics in NSDL. Would that be fair? Yeah. And in fact, I was almost certain that it was going to appear in the program as that, but then it didn't. So if you've come here expecting to have the impact question solved, I do apologize. Also, if you're not that fond of web metrics, I apologize again. And but we'll see how it goes. And in fact, I also apologize maybe to people like Lee, who may have seen some of these slides at some point. Yeah. Some of these slides might be slightly familiar to some or more of you, but hopefully not to everybody. Well, we still have stragglers. How's it doing out there? Did we finish? Okay, pretty cleared out. Okay, so we have the faithful are here. Okay, so I think the idea is here. In the title of the session, we do mention, you know, how do we think about impacts, and I think the one of the ways we're going to try and approach this in the session through the by means of talking about web metrics is to start to think about, well, what do web metrics actually tell us about the things that people do with NSDL, and how in turn can our understanding of the things that people do with NSDL inform our understanding of the impact question, and how we go about either framing that question or answering it. So I said, yeah, this is really, it's pretty heavily on the web metrics, the first part of this thing, so I do apologize for that, but hopefully the reasons for that will become clear as we proceed. So what are web metrics? And web metrics are measurements of the user's interactions with a website, for instance, your website. Why are they useful? Well, they support you to understand, manage, and improve your website. And in the case of this, case of NSDL, they could help and support understanding and management of NSDL impact, although the way in which that could be done still has to be worked out. It's important to realize that there are no standard web metrics. And in fact, people such as myself, before I began work on web metrics, I assumed, well, you know, web metrics are something like, you know, the meter for the water or the electricity on the side of the house, and you could go and look at it and see how much web usage had gone on, and you would get some nice figure, which would give you some insight into what was happening. Unfortunately, that's not really the case, and different web metrics tools will measure your site traffic in different ways. So here we have some basic web metrics concepts. These are the ones which you'll find mentioned in the increasing number of reports that Bob and I are producing for NSDL and putting up on the NSDL website. But they're actually pretty distinct concepts. So it's useful to distinguish between things such as a visitor. Now, a visitor is a person visiting your site from an internet computer most of the time. There are qualifications to that, because a person, somebody visiting could also be a robot or a crawler and so on. A page view is a second web metric concept, is a record of that person's viewing of a web page, basically an HTML file. The third concept we have here is a hit. Now, people always talk about hits, and you hear a lot of talk about hits. On my website, had so many hits, da-da-da-da-da, and so on. It's very hard to know what people are talking about when they say we had so many hits. But technically, a hit is a web page. Well, the total of the hits is the total for the web pages plus all the files in that page. And a hit is it's just basically one file being downloaded from your server. So if you have a web page with 10 images on it, that will count as 11 hits on your server. A visit, link to the visitor, it includes the viewing of one or more linked web pages and ends after a period of inactivity, typically about 30 minutes. So if we receive no further calls on the server from your IP address after 30 minutes, we assume that either you've gone off and done something and come back, or you know somebody else is using the computer and it gets counted as a different visit. Otherwise, for instance, people visiting from a computer lab would all count as one visit if they were strung out over a day. But more about that in the next slide. And a unique visitor is just like an interesting concept. We don't really use it, but it's an interesting one. You could say, well, it's the aggregation of all the visits by the same visitor in a specified time frame. So you could, for instance, if you're looking at daily unique visits or visits within a 24-hour period, you would have count all five visits within one day would equal one unique visit. So we have some caveats with web metrics here. So the number of hits you will record will be greater than the number of page views, and the number of page views you record will be greater than the number of visits. In other words, visits don't equal page views, don't equal hits. Another caveat is that a visitor is not necessarily a person. Not all visitors count, and you do not want to count all visitors. Traffic varies over time, which affects how you measure and report your statistics, and different tools measure use on the same site in different ways. So, for instance, we could say the number of hits is greater than the number of page views, which is greater than the number of visits. Visitor X using site Y over a period of 2 days will generate, in this example, five visits, but two daily unique visits, or 12 page views, or 36 hits. And the metric we choose to concentrate on here for various reasons, which starts to get around to the impact question, is that of the visit, and a little bit more on visits in later slides. But what does this mean in the case of Omniture and in the case of NSDL.org? So we could say, for instance, in May 2006, using Omniture, if you quote the Omniture figures, we had 13,743 visits. If we choose to go to AWStats, which is our server-side web, our server-side statistics package, and count the number of hits, we have 512,841 hits. Now, obviously, it'd be much nicer to report to Lee that we get 500,000 hits a month. We are kind of tempted to do so from time to time, but it's a fairly meaningless statistic. And for a number of reasons, and the more rigorous you get with these things, the narrower you sort of pass them down and close them down. And in fact, what we do report to Lee and other folks at NSF, and I also report out to Core Integration and other people, are the number of visits from Omniture, which is the 13,000 figure down at the bottom. But what's that? That's 40-1, I think, that ratio. So. You have to be pretty careful to specify what you're reporting and why when you report your figures. Another caveat here is that a visitor is not necessarily a person. For instance, you could have multiple students on the same computer in the computer lab or count as one visitor, or a teacher visiting NSDL.org from their office and later from a home computer will count as two separate visitors in this in the statistics. A visitor could be a non-human bot or crawler indexing your site. Number three is that not all visitors count, so the visitors you want to count. If anybody's got any questions, actually, just feel free to jump in and wave your hand. Yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, I should have introduced that before. We run a number of different web metrics packages. So AWStats runs on our server, so it just basically counts all the traffic coming in to the server at the point of the server. Omniture uses a different technology, and hence the big disparity in the figures it reports. We've actually been running AWStats for 4 or 5 years now, I think, at Cornell. So we've got quite a historical trend for the figures there. Web trends would be in the AWStats sort of area, and that compared to the use of Omniture, it would report far more traffic than Omniture does. Briefly and technically, and I'm not really a technical person, so I could be mangling this explanation, but Omniture works through a little bit of JavaScript embedded at the end of the HTML on each page. It basically lies between the closing body tag and the closing HTML tag. It just sits there. And it's actually triggered when you load the page. So a human being visiting a site and loading a page will then load the JavaScript, whereas a bot or a crawler crawling through the site will not trigger the JavaScript. So Omniture, by the nature of the technology, excludes bots and crawlers from your web metrics results. Mm-hmm.
The web metrics for AWS Dash at Cornell are excluding robots as well. I'm not sure what the difference is on those. But it also may be that you're controlling better for developers and users. You know, if you remove those, but maybe they don't possibly.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't want to be sort of criticizing the AWS stats folks here, because DNX actually does Yeah. Well, Dean does a very good job of counting things out. Part of the problem is that if somebody are reporting their web server site stats, you have no idea unless you actually talk to that person and figure out what they've done to exclude bots and crawlers. You have no idea what that traffic represents on the site, for instance. Another reason for choosing Omniture. And yeah, there are a number of people using your site, for instance, developers coming back. Maybe they're constantly refreshing the page because they're working on it, and they could skew your results. So you want to exclude those, and we can do those by blocking their IP addresses at a very high level anyway. Persuading them to put cookies on their machines, which means that machine is then blocked from Omniture, and so on. These are people you don't want to count. So here, not all visitors count. Here's an interesting example. NSDL gets a lot of visitors from India and Google India. So India is the fourth largest NSDL user. We can tell that from the Omniture stats. This is a good thing, isn't it? Well, India, developing country, they don't have access to scientific textbooks or whatever. So maybe we're doing a real good job in India. Well, actually, there's an Indian investment corporation called the National Securities Depository Limited. And perhaps most Indian visitors are actually looking for this NSDL. Either when they're getting referred to us from Google, they see NSDL. Maybe it's not the NSDL they want, but they think, oh, whatever, I'll look at it anyway. There you are, NSDL, .co.in. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful in trying to figure out exactly what your visitor's doing and what your traffic is doing. We have traffic varies over time. We have regular, daily, weekly, monthly, annual, and irregular fluctuations. So when you measure your web stats, affects your results quite considerably, and you need reliable longitudinal baseline stats to identify long-term trends. And I would say ideally, a minimum of 1 year stats are required in order to be, just figure out what traffic on your site is doing. Is it going up? Is it going down? And so on. And here are some daily fluctuations, for example. People not really that active in the morning. Everybody seems to have a cup of coffee at about 7 a.m. and then usage goes up. Evening's a bit, is a little bit higher. I'm assuming people doing homework, teachers prepping for class. A couple of peaks in the middle here, East Coast and West Coast, I'm assuming, from our visitor logs, from Omniture. We have monthly fluctuations. So here we are. Regular dips every 7 days, well, that would be the weekend. People go home. Although here is, in fact, Thanksgiving. But you see the point is, if you jump into these things, if you start measuring at one point and you're looking for trends, you have to start taking all these things which affect your traffic into account. Otherwise, you don't know, is your trend up or down, because you don't know if traffic is supposed to be going up or down. I actually didn't do that, so that was notes to Mick. But what I was hoping to show here was that, if, for instance, you could look at traffic over a year, it goes da 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 da, it goes up and down quite a bit. But if you smooth it out in a 365-day average, you get actually a nice little upward gradient, which shows the, you know, the upward growth in NSDL traffic over time. And it's actually very hard to see unless you have this smoothing there. And so different tools count visitors in different ways, and some of these differences and the way the tools work are, you know, are completely obscure. I really do confess I do not understand how this works. I'm trying to explain this to people. The analogy I'm using at the moment is that people think, well, you know, web metrics are the same as a utility bill. You know, two people plus the same use equals the same bill. Whereas the more correct analogy is a cell phone bill, which is two people plus the same use plus a different plan, different bills for completely obscure reasons, again, which nobody understands. So it is, in fact, difficult to map and standardize across tools. So our solution is we use a third-party program called Omniture, which tries to standardize web metrics across sites, across NSDL, basically measures traffic using JavaScript and cookies. Our stats are often lower than projects' own server-based web metrics, as I've explained. But I also think they're more reliable, which makes them more useful for then trying to, you can then start to feed your analysis of these statistics back into your analysis of NSDL. And it's quite easy for me. I can look at the data and analyze it in a web browser. This is what Omniture looks like. And next, core integration. We're implementing Omniture and standardizing Omniture data across the pathways and trying to standardize different metrics for all the projects. Compare the use across different projects. And this is the point I'm trying to get to with regards to starting to think about impact, is that what we're trying to do here, and Bob and I have actually talked about this a lot, I don't know how far we've actually got in concrete terms, but what we're trying to do is develop what I call anyway a task-centric model of web metrics, where the unit of analysis is no longer that of the visit or the hit or the page view, but the task. What do people actually want to do when they come to NSDL.org? Do they spend a lot of time looking around the site? Do they want to get out of there as soon as possible? What kind of tasks are they trying to achieve? Can we identify patterns of tasks based on patterns of usage? Can we then try and tie those different patterns of usage to specific tasks by talking to users, for instance? Identifying typical task profiles from web metrics. And once we've start to understand what people are really doing with NSDL through web metrics, then I'm hoping that is going to give us at least one leg of a triangulation into what impact might be. Because obviously, one way to define impact is in terms of test scores, but another way to define impact is in terms of how well did NSDL suit the needs of the person using it. And to get into the area of how well did it suit the needs of the person using it, you have to identify the needs, and we're trying to do that by looking at the tasks. For instance, one way I've been trying to do this over the past 6 months or so is looking at people's search behaviors on NSDL. And of course, there's a large number of different behaviors and different types of users who come into NSDL, but in looking at search behavior, I did some user testing and some interviews with users, and it turns out from the interviews and the user testing that people don't really want to spend that much time on NSDL.org, which might be, you know, sort of counterintuitive in that a very short experience is a happy experience for people, because a lot of the time web metrics and website design seems to be designed to hold you on the site as long as possible. But when you listen to people talking about it, you know, they're rushed for time and so on. Teachers are rushed for time. And what they want to do is try and go into NSDL, find what they want as quickly as possible, and leave as quickly as possible. And in fact, we can see that in the Omniture web metrics, for instance. We can start to identify these very short paths through the site and say, well, people visit the front page, they enter a search term, they go to the search results page, they choose a resource and leave. And that very short path, well, actually the shortest path on NSDL.org from the web metrics is just going in through the front page and then leaving without doing anything. But the second shortest, you know, that's the most popular one as well. The second most popular one is actually people going from the front page to the search results page and then leaving, which backs up the evidence from Omniture, which backs up the evidence from the interviews, that people are very interested in minimizing the time they spent fiddling around with their search options and so on. And which then leads to the idea of, you know, the impact from that. Well, the task from that then is people are trying to find and locate things as quickly as possible. And you can then start to think about, well, what are the impact questions which arise from that task? And but just as it's getting interesting, I have to admit that I have no, I'm not going to talk about the case study. I don't really think it's relevant at this point. But that's where we are in our thinking, or that's where I am in my thinking. I think Bob's thinking is at least similar to mine, and he has some much more detailed and much more richly detailed case studies he can talk about here. And I think if I'm correct, Bob, what we want to do is like focus on this idea of the task unit, and what are people accomplishing, and then take that forward into a discussion of how we might start to think more richly about this in terms of impact questions and evaluation. Okay. I need to get out of this. Oh, okay.
I'm just going to move this over here. So in deference to Kay, I'm going to do the pre-presentation before the presentation. It will have no PowerPoint because I just did it. So why am I here is the question I keep asking myself. And the literal answer is because the person who had Mick's job last year quit, and before they hired Mick, they needed somebody to run this session last year, so they asked me. And not knowing what I was in for, I panicked and said, oh my gosh, I've got to actually come up with some results. So I went and spent a few Saturdays, you know, in the quiet and did something and cobbled together a presentation and put it together. The upside of that is that I was able to get some results, and that was nice. The downside, of course, is that it was all based on Teacher's Domain, which is my project, and Teacher's Domain has a lot of very unique, well, you can't be very unique, you're either unique or you're not, but has some specific setup that makes it easy to get some of these metrics information, but that's not typically how other people have their sites set up. So what I'm going to try to do this time, even though I will fail, I will admit right off I'm going to fail because I'm going to have to go back to my own data because that's what I have closest to me. But some of the things that I've learned over the last year about impact is, first of all, that impact covers the entire product life cycle. And while our end of things has been sort of the, okay, now I've built it, did they come question, which is important and it gives you that end result, we're gonna have to eventually start pulling that impact all the way through back to how do we start building our sites. And that was one of the sessions this morning, which unfortunately I didn't get to go to. So I was dying to find out what they know. So I have to lean on some people to get me that information. Because while you can build a perfect site, I mean, getting back to us, in the end, we have to be able to justify the funding that we got to say, yeah, it was money well spent. Look, we accomplished something. So that's the big challenge. And everyone has different metadata that's useful for metrics. So there's that challenge too, because we have to figure out how to communicate to each other to be able to give each other ideas on, well, we tried this and we learned this about our site. Can you apply this same technique to your site and see what happens there? So the first step to that, I think, is talking the same lingo, which Mick has already outlined. And I think what he's been doing so far really does represent a good analysis of where things fall down in terms of that people talk hits when they should be talking visitors, and I'm going to get to that in the PowerPoint side of the presentation. But what I was really hoping to get out of this group is the beginning, the seed of more community interaction within the NSDL on this topic. So sharing of ideas, people suggesting, hey, have you thought about correlating your web metrics to this external piece of information? And for example, I've done some stuff with the US Census and a few other things, but I know I have only scratched the surface. This, you know, other people will have much better sense of where to get some of this information. So I'm hoping to get some of that out of you. So that covers my questions. So the other question was, why are you here? What are you hoping to learn? So I'm hoping you'll be able to drive that once I'm done talking and we can get some communication going and then go on from there. Okay. Now I gotta switch this over to the other presentation. Ah, there it is. The magic key is there. Okay. What is so hard about webmetrics? First, you know, you go to your server log and you look at it, and it's a bunch of rows of hits, essentially, and you don't know anything about who these people were. You know where they were in your site, you know when they were there. You can kind of follow them through the site, but that's about it. And there's a lot of anonymity. And the users love that, because they don't really want Big Brother watching them when they surf the web, even if it's a nice, happy K-12 friendly site. But for the metrics wrangler, people like me and Mick, it's extremely frustrating because we want to know everything about you. We're interested in you. We like you. We want to know what you're thinking when you're on our site so we know if we're doing a good job. That leads to too much guessing. One of the sad lessons I've learned is that almost everything that I've done has ended up being wrong because of uncertainties and assumptions that went into the entire process. And hence going back to the realization that we really have to think about metrics from day zero when we have our first meeting on, we're going to start a new service for the K-12 community to do this, that's got to be in there too. And there's a lot of footwork. You know, I can come up with all sorts of wonderful stats, but they may not mean anything because the people that you're trying to impress later on or say, look, we were successful, we did a good job, they may be talking a different lingo. What matters to me may not matter to somebody else. We may not be able to give you the information that you want, so we have to get that communication going. So where do you start? What do you have got? Well, if you've got a website, you've got server logs. So we can at least we have that common denominator. The people in the Pathways groups, now if you've linked into Omniture, we now have that common set of reporting, which is helpful because now we can at least talk the same lingo. We can at least intercompare somehow. And if your site has some sort of registration, to some extent you've got some other user information which you can exploit. So from that, what do you know? You've got the path information, you know where people have been and when. So from there you can get things like page counts and session metadata, and that's great. What do you do with that? Well, you analyze it, you try to figure out who your user populations are, because that gives you an idea of what they're doing and whether or not they're finding what they want, or they're getting something out of it. And then what you have to do is go back, start over again, and question all your assumptions to make sure that what you've come up with is really the right picture. So test the results, come up with new experiments, stick your feet up on the desk and think, now really, what's going on here and what questions haven't I asked yet? And try to start throwing data at data and hope that a picture will eventually come into focus. So to give you a couple, I've got two case studies here to show you very simple things people talk about in terms of web stats where when you actually start looking at it, the real picture is not the assumption. So when we started Teachers Domain, the idea when this concept of session length came up, the expectation was, it's mostly videos. The videos are 5-6 minutes in length. Teachers will set them up. They'll show them. There'll be a little bit of Q&A. They may go back and show a segment over again if they think they need to. 10 minutes. When you go and look at Omniture for Teachers Domain, you look at the average session length, it's, 10 minutes. Hey, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, hit it dead on, right? So eventually I went back and said, what's the distribution? I want to see where the long tail is and the short tail is, and this is the distribution. And yeah, there's that Gaussian-like thing out on the side, the bell curve, and it's sort of centered around 10 minutes, but that's only a piece of the answer. At the short term, you've got this big spike right around a few seconds. Now the first thing is getting back to these uncertainties. Session length, as Mick said, doesn't include the last page visited. So if you go along and you're searching and searching and then you find the page you're looking for and you read it for 20 minutes, you're really only measuring the time up to the point where you discovered the thing that you were really looking for. So all our data is wrong anyway. So 6 seconds could be 6 seconds to an hour. I don't know. But nonetheless, the distribution's there. What I finally figured out from looking at the logs is that I really had two populations of users. The first population were the ones we were thinking of when we set up the site. They're the ones that kind of go in, they look around, they find stuff, and then they play. The second group come in from Google searches. They know exactly what they want, and they're sort of like the supermarket equivalent of the bread, eggs, milk, and cheese people. You know, they're on their way home, they've got to pick up stuff, they get their stuff, they get in the express line, they're out. For them, success means I went and looked, I went, I found it, I left. I didn't want to browse. Maybe someday I'll come back and do window shopping, but I looked for what I needed. You gave me what I needed. Thank you very much. That's the end of our relationship. But they're both successful. But one of them we hadn't anticipated. So now we should go back and look at our site and say, now, wait a minute. We've got all these people who aren't trying to navigate the way that we said we were going to have them navigate. Is our site actually set up well for these people? I mean, do we have everything buried six pages deep? Or can we actually get it to think we can work out a way that users who come in looking for a certain search term will see other things around it that are relevant to what they were looking for rather than what we thought would be perfect for setting up the site? So that's one lesson learned. Then I had another strange one where I took the same sort of data and flipped it around. I said, okay, I've got these users who come back time after time, or even twice. What's the distance of time between their sessions? And I really had no idea what to expect. And I certainly didn't expect that blue line, which has this weird thing where you've got these peaks 24 hours or 48 or 72 hours apart. So that says that a lot of our users come back at almost exactly the same time every day, which I hadn't expected. And I suppose, okay, this could be a teacher whose free time during the school day is between 9 and 10. That's their free period, and that's when they're hitting the net. Or they're hitting the net every night after dinner at 8 o'clock, and so maybe that works out. And that was cool, you know, that was a neat picture, I didn't expect that. The problem was this thing on the left with these extremely short session frequencies. And at that end of the x-axis, you're down at around 1 second, which implies that I'll have all these users sitting at my front page of my site going login, 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 over and over again, you know, compulsive people. And I didn't think that was really the case. And I thought, okay, there's got to be a bug somewhere. And I went and I looked and I couldn't find it. And it drove me nuts because I had to figure out what was going on here. So I finally said, okay, let me go look at the top 10 and top 20 users. Well, that's the pink and the yellow lines, and yellow doesn't show up very well, but it basically makes up almost 50% of that tail. And then I went back and looked at them, and then I figured out what was going on. Teacher registers for teacher's domain. Teacher puts the username and password on the blackboard. Students all copy it down. They go down to the computer lab. Teacher says, okay, now log on to this site, and the entire classroom goes bang at once, and all the logins go up. So from Mick's point of view, it's a visit with a user, but it's not a user. It's 20 or 30 users on the same account. So now all these metrics that everybody says, well, we get so many independent users every month, has this error bar that's completely unknown. It could be 20 times off. So, you know, users don't behave the way you expect you will, and so your metrics now have to take that into consideration. So you have to go looking for these strange distributions because they're going to be there, and they're going to affect how you evaluate how your site is being used. Then there's the other thing about metrics that drives me nuts, is the my site is better than yours because I get X number of hits and you only got X minus some number. You know, I get 1 million hits a week and you only get 50,000, therefore my site must be better than yours. And my analogy for this is the Scottish restaurant, who have served over 99 billion something. There's only 6 billion people on the planet, so unless a time machine or space aliens are involved, we've got a problem with counting or communication. Maybe it's number of sales receipts, but then that's not, there's a certain, you know, the word served here becomes ambiguous. So counts are great, but you have to compare them to something to know what it means. Because if you've got 1 million hits a month, Well, if you're trying to compete with Google, that's nothing. On the other hand, if you're the, you know, South Dakota butterfly enthusiast organization, a million hits a month might be fantastic in terms of reaching your target population. So you have to be a little honest about who you're trying to reach and knowing that the people who are hitting your site is that population. Okay. Another way to get the work done is to let somebody else do it, which is why I like, one of the reasons why I like Omniture. It does all these stats for you and you just kind of click and there they are. So the one on the top is over some period of time, the number of users from certain states. It gets all this great geospatial data automatically now down to the city level. I think it's wonderful. Of course, this is a bad plot because it's number of counts, right? So I just violated my own rule. You can turn it around to per capita, but for some reason that hasn't been working lately, so I had to use that map for, I don't know, we have to go talk to our Omniture people. And the other thing that's nice is if you can eventually take your results and throw them at some other data set. So what I've been able to do, because I know where the schools are that our users are at, is cross-correlate that with the US Census and throwing data against data, coming up with the number of approximately 20% of our students at the schools that use Teachers Domain live below the poverty line. Well, that's a useful number, because it references something that people have interest in, and you have some sort of thing. You can't go higher than 100%, you can't go lower than zero, so at least you have some relative thing. So if you're comparing two sites, and one can say 20 and one says 80, okay, now you've got a comparison that might help you decide whose proposal gets funded. And again, one of the critiques of Teachers Domain is that we require registration, but it does get the job done. Like I said, we link our users against their school or organization, so since I have a database of schools, I can now check that number against the total. So over time, I've been able to watch what percentage of schools in the country have used our site, and we've just past 30%, we should hit 1/3 by the end of the year. So this isn't like a 4 out of 5 dentists number. I mean, I could be subpoenaed for the list and hand it over. Not that I want to, but I suppose it's a possibility. This is a great stat, I mean, in my opinion, because I really know what I'm looking at. I know who my target population is, and I know if they've been there or not. There's, you know, thousands of other users that aren't even in the K-12 community. You know, somebody from an aquarium might be coming in to look at stuff on whales, and that's great, and they get counted in the visitors. But in terms of that, they're not really part of my target audience. I'm glad they're there, but these are the people that, you know, the NSDL is most interested in, and these are the people that, you know, we want to make sure have been hitting the site because that's where our impact is supposed to be. Sure. Reticent about registration?
Yeah.
Okay.
How
2 years ago, I was at my first NSDL meeting, and my evangelism box then was registration is not a dirty word. And all these people here who are more well-known than I were expressing the opinion that they never register for sites. They'll do anything to get around registration. They'll send in bogus information, whatever. And so I ran around the meeting chasing these people, saying, okay, what would it take for you to register? What's the carrot? And finally people started admitting that. They said, okay, I might consider it if you let me test drive the site. I said, okay, you can test drive a site, but you can test drive a car, but you can't test drive an orange. So eventually you've got to decide to buy the car or not come back. So I said, okay, so I went home, and over a couple of months, we set up a test drive for Teachers Domain. So you can actually now go on the site. If you come in from another service, the research result or whatever, you go right to the resource page or whatever without bypassing registration, and it'll say, do you want to take a test drive? You say yes, and it just lets you in. It doesn't bother you and for a few minutes, and then it comes back and says, well, you know, you've test driven. Maybe you should consider registering. But even then, you know, the problem is that, well, what I've let happen since then is that people have been test driving it over and over and over and over again. And even worse, my coworkers at WGBH tend to just hit the test drive button when they want to check something really quick. So I haven't penalized anybody who's test driven 500, 600, 700 times, but I know they're out there. And eventually I'll think of what to do with them. But as a concept, I think it's a good idea because it does let people get in, get a taste of things, and then get out. And the number of test drives is huge. It's not as large as the number of logins. It didn't overwhelm it, which was my fear. But it did work. So yeah, it's a nice way to handle it. Okay, one of the things that I try to do, I do all my stats every month, like a good web person. And I'm finding over time that it's taking longer and longer and longer for two reasons. One, because we're getting more hits. That's good. Two, because people keep asking me for more stats, which is good because it means they think I'm contributing to my job and hopefully that turns into a good performance review. But it does mean that I end up spending more time on it than they planned. I can offer two things that have really sped things up for me. One that was really cool. If you set a session cookie on your site, get your web geek server person to alter Apache or whatever other server you're using to stick that cookie value at the end of your log, at the every line, because it makes it really fast to go through and identify people. Much faster than reading at every line and trying to follow the IP numbers or whatever. The other thing you can do is then take that data, filter out the stuff you don't want, you know, the little icons and, you know, just the, if you want just the pages rather than all the things on the pages, so the pages, not the hits, and stick it in a database, MySQL or Postgres or something, and use that as the basis of your mining. It takes a long time to ingest stuff, but it does speed up the analysis, and you can really start getting a lot more information in a lot less time. So you just have to come up with a bribe for your server guy, and that should work. Okay, the other thing that I'm just starting to get into now that I've got my database, because that was the present they gave me after last year, and I've just now put in 5 years of logs into it, is path analysis, because now this gets starting to get into the fun stuff, because now, even though you can count the number of users, and you can look and see, you know, all these people came in from Google and they were looking for carbon cycle diagram, and they found it. I mean, I know we've got one of those resources. Okay, cool, but we still don't know. Did they like it? Was it a good carbon cycle diagram? Was it the right color? You know, whatever their reasons for wanting a carbon cycle diagram. So this starts to get into things like path analysis, following people through the site, which is something Mick was also talking about, and trying to figure out if you can relate this to some sort of task. Because now you can start identifying what they wanted and how they wanted it. I mean, it's all the other questions, how, why, beyond who and what. And this is, I've just started doing this, and this is sort of a diagram of a very simple website and a couple of different paths. And you've got the red guy who starts at the home page and works their way down and finds something. And you've got the blue person who kind of goes all over the place, goes over to that service, which might be a search thing, and that pops you over there. And then if anybody was really looking at this diagram, they noticed the little green person down in the corner who came into the site, not through the home page. Maybe they were a test driver, I don't know. They looked at one link and left. So we have to start looking at all these different things to figure it out. One thing we learned from our first foray into this was that in Teachers Domain version 2, users would come in and hit our bottom subtopic pages, which were lists of resources. And they'd go to the first one, hit the back button, go to the second one, hit the back button, go to the third one, hit the back button. And we realized that we had never set up any sort of navigation help for people. We thought people were going to go to the subtopic page, find what they were looking for, and go to the resource, and that was kind of it, you know, use it. Instead, a lot of people are going to these subtopic pages and browsing, using them as sort of a mini browser within the site. And that was, we'd never thought of that in terms of when we were setting up navigation and design and everything else. And V3 hasn't quite tackled that problem, but it will soon. But the logs and watching path analysis can really help you tell, are users able to effectively use your site? Are they having trouble getting through it? They may think you're the most wonderful site on the planet. They know you've got everything they want, but it's really hard to get there. And you know, even like Amazon now, I have a real hard time finding things sometime because it's got everything in it. You go to their page and it tells you everything about the book that you were looking at, but trying to find another book, it's hard to do. So the experience is that, you know, usage alone doesn't tell you if the user's experience was beneficial. Again, we have to get more traction on that problem, we're going to have to start thinking further back in time than looking at the after effects, the web logs. We're going to have to start thinking about ways of setting our sites up that tell us that as the user goes through it. And one of the posters last night had a really cool setup for math, where students going through the resources they'd be able to tell whether or not by how long they were on the page or how they were using the page, whether or not they probably were getting it, and whether or not there should be more remediation. Well, if you start looking at those paths and seeing, you know, how many users need the remediation, how many don't, well, now you've got educational impact. And you're getting it through your web logs, but it's because you've set up your site to trap that information, so now you can go back and retrieve it. Beware of prejudging your definition of success. As I said, our 10 minutes was a great successful thing. We knew we hit the target, except we didn't hit the target. Well, we did, but only for some fraction of our users. And understand the limits of your metrics, because, like I said, there's error bars on all of it. And the assumption is a million assumptions that go into setting up any website, and all of them affect the stuff you get. So now what I'd like to do is kind of open this up to see what ideas other people have had and experiences people have had working with their own sites, or just critiques or questions, or I don't know. I would really like to turn this into an interaction more than something dogmatic, because I know I certainly don't have all the answers. Please. Or do you want more case studies? Yeah, in the back.
I'll throw myself on the spear. I've seen some government agencies, they have some sort of randomized pop-up survey that allows you to generalize the findings, because with NSTA and I'm chatting our own people, when we have a volunteer survey that you put up, but it's who's on at that time or who loves it, you get a huge response pretty quickly, but obviously you can't generalize that. So what are some of the DMAs for that technology that
What a perfect place to start with the sword. Because, you didn't fall on the sword. This is great. Because in August, we had a meeting with the evaluation committee, and this came up. And I'm really hoping that, because you're on that committee, we can start talking about that. Coming up with ideas to do surveys that don't upset the user is a really great challenge, and that's immediate feedback. And one of the ideas that came out of it, because you know, you go to a site, you buy something, and they come back with the last thing and says, would you please spend a few minutes to, you know, fill out this questionnaire? And the universal response is, no, I just bought the water skis, I don't care, I wanna go use them now. But if you can figure out a way to make that work, and the committee, some of the ideas that came out of that meeting were really cool. One of them was that if you could instead of putting your questionnaire in a big box, you know, 20 questions or 10 questions, just spread them out, stick them on your site, target them to the people and what they've been doing. So again, the path analysis, the task-oriented stuff, and just give them a question that I think does two things. One, emphasizes that the nature of the question is to add to some repository data or whatever, you know, not something so geeky from their side, but of the community of users. So in other words, first, reinforce the fact that this is coming from people like you. and then only asking one question, and a simple question, so that, you know, maybe not something as arcane as, was this resource useful to you? Because that, you know, what does that mean? But, you know, something a little, you know, getting the people who really know how to write these things, of which, you know, I am not one of them, to come up with really good questions that they can answer very quickly, and then leave them alone. Over time, if you're getting 10, 20,000 visits a month, at least the numbers of the answers to the questions you're getting are A, honest, and B, targeted, and C, somewhat, hopefully, enthusiastic. So you can probably do a really, you know, a really good job in terms of getting intermediary information on specific questions that you really want to ask. And I'm really hoping we can do that with Teachers Domain at some point. For just those reasons. Because you can also do it, in our case, teachers versus students. Or other, you know, the guy out in that aquarium. And to say, well, yeah, we're a K-12 resource, but you're not K-12. Kind of finding out, why are you here? What are you getting out of this that we didn't even think about when we set up the site? You're not one of our target populations. Maybe you should be. You know, learning the answers to those questions. Next. Yay.
Visitors. Because of the questions we're trying to answer there, you'd have to try and, because of the approach we're taking with the overall evaluation and those questions as well, we don't see any use in, really any use in hits and so on.
You have to go back to the pages to understand where people, it's kind of like, you know, you start out with a virgin forest, right? And then you let everybody start walking through it. They're going to start making paths, and some of them are going to be bushwhacking. They're the only ones that's ever been that way. And other people are going to go along the river, and you're going to end up with this nice path after a few years of usage. And these things happen naturally for some reason. There's an attractive thing to certain parts of your environment, and there's a commonality to that usage. And I think that that's kind of where the server logs are that territory, and it's a question of how do you get that picture out of it. So I would say, yeah, visitors, paths, and somehow getting some sort of
some geographical
that, or and after that maybe just getting some sort of sense of what their impressions were, and that's the hard one to trap.
Mm-hmm. But then once they've downloaded an artifact, we don't have any idea how they use it. Right?
Some yes and no. It depends on the site. I mean, in our case, you can't download everything because of rights problems. But in open content worlds, you can, of course. But then it's how do you set yourself up to trap stuff? Because what if you could set up a perfect, wonderful community thing where all the content were open? But if you also set it up that they could put the stuff back. For example, let's say you had a bunch of videos and interactives and students could go and take pieces and edit them themselves and make their own video. But you also create the community where students can share their results. Now you get to trap some of that. You won't get everything, of course, but you'll get the stuff where it matters the most, and you get to see what people have done. So again, it gets all the way back to step zero. You know, you have to be beyond the production and setting up the site and turning it on. There's also you have to start thinking about, you know, how are we gonna learn from what they tell us, rather than how are we gonna inform them from what we know. I mean, both are important, but that's the one that's not generally done.
And I think you do need a question to answer. The question, your research question, will drive the sort of metrics you select, because there are, you know, with Omniture, there are hundreds of different types of metrics you could potentially keep tracking, but they're not necessarily meaningful unless you have the context of the research question, and then you can start to find out more about your site. If you're trying to find out specific things.
And you had a question.
Well, I was just going to respond because
Yeah, it's a good point.
So again, it's that whole cycle of things.
So we collect consumer information on one end, we do annual surveys, we do focus groups.
And it's something else to point out there, that it's a cycle whose period is less than your funding cycle. You have to actually have several of these iterations, because if it's just, you know, we're going to go set it up, do a report, and then go back again, you haven't answered. You haven't really made inroads. But if you can go through two or three cycles of it and say, here's how we've improved things along the way, then aha.
And triangulation with other research that you're doing is important.
I'm curious about that, because in the sense of, I think it's great that you did that. I'm curious to know how much, not so much how much traffic that gets, but what sort of interaction have you had with other groups because of putting that report out?
So what we do is, so we did the report for the Venn Collaborative.
Right.
And then I, as a microbiologist, went and did it for the microbiome, and I have much more specific data for the microbiome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent. And yeah.
Now, where it's gone beyond, last year, I heard 2 years ago, I presented it at NSDL, and what's more used, I don't know. But it's been presented, and, you know, the data's there, you can use the questions. A lot, this morning, I was sitting in another educational impact question.
That's the one I wish I had been at.
And the woman I was talking to, because she had surveyed biology teachers, and I said, so I sat in her group, and was on online resources, and I said, well, 2 years ago, this is what we learned about higher ed teachers versus K-12 teachers, because you could split out. And I said, for instance, when you looked at the data, the higher ed folks were telling us that they use the library resources mainly to improve their classroom presentations. Okay, so they're basically taking things as a
task.
The micro library, which is our site, is a site that is for undergraduates. We know K-12 teachers use it, but it's very clear that they're using it to their own professional development.
And you've just made my day, because you've just outlined two tasks. This is why they're at the site, what they're trying to get done.
Yeah, there's like six tasks that we measure for.
Excellent. Anyone else?
Registration is
I can take that question in two directions. Could I have done anything without the NSDL, or could I have done, or what could I have done without the registration, without the registration within the NSDL? Outside, it's the same story as everybody else, right? You're kind of driving blind, and you do the best you can. You drill and you infer. The cool thing about the NSDL in this realm is that a lot of the things that have been going on behind the scenes, and some of them haven't quite, they're not soup yet, but they're almost soup, would effectively give me some, not all, but some of the same information, and also some information I still don't have. And it all depends on how much data sharing you can get away with. For example, something I realized yesterday during the PI meeting is that the community sign-on can be run in any direction you like. And so if somebody comes into Teacher's Domain from some other site that has geolocation information, well, if I didn't have it, now I do. So anybody who uses Teacher's Domain and registers and uses any of the other NSDL groups now can get geolocation from us, depending on how transparent the data model is. And maybe that's not a good idea for, you know, all the people who don't like registering for places because they fear Big Brother. This may be their worst, you know, one of their worst dreams imagined. But nonetheless, the technology would be there. Omniture, you know, being one of the pathways, we get that information. So even if I didn't have it before, I could now get some of it. I mean, Omniture is a little difficult to work with when you're trying to get a lot of things out of them, and I suspect that's just part of their price model. That if you know, throw enough money at Omniture, they'll be more than happy to give you more information. But you know, the stuff's there. Where 4 years ago, you know, when I was just getting my data on my own, that's what I had, and if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have had as much. So there's two aspects of it. But certainly the NSDL has been very helpful toward getting closer, or in making it easier to help others get closer, based on what I've learned so far. But definitely registration is, and doing it in the way that we do it, where we register users tied to some organization, so you can have a John Smith account at every single public school in the country, or every single school in the country, and they don't know about each other. And the only reason we didn't do that thinking ahead for, I mean, I have to be honest and say, we didn't do that thinking ahead that someday this is going to give us great data metrics. I did it because I can't stand registering for sites and being B. Donahue 79649 on one site and B. Donahue 46847 on another site because all the other B. Donahues got there first. You know, I like to have the same username, so this was my way of cheating and getting it. And it just turned out later that, hey, you know, you can cross-reference this with the U.S. Census. Wow. But it definitely helps. But being able to compare even gross registration information across projects will probably be one of the next steps to helping everybody get better impact data. In the back.
Mm-hmm. And buy that product. There is a rich, and the other registry is the science teacher. So I think there's a rich data mine also, not just U.S. Census, but when you compare early career teachers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean,
the folks on the bottom up, and then
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my problem is not that I'm sitting around bored trying to think of new metrics to play with. I mean, it's, you know, what do I want to try today? It's only going to get more and more fun, especially with things like community sign-on, because then it's, you know, we may not know so much about you, but the NSTA does, or at least can tell us a little bit. I mean, it doesn't have to be your entire life, you know, life story. It can be just, you know, I didn't know you were a K-8 teacher, but they can, you know, because you came in through NSTA from this sort of set of resources, okay, now I have a little bit more information. I can, and it's not so much just for the big brother aspects of it. It's also for helping create a better, well, yeah, and also a better experience for the user. And I was saying to somebody last night in the poster session, if I know that someone's coming in looking for resources in a certain area, well, there's no point in pulling out a random resource for my resource highlight box on my homepage. Why can't I just focus it on something that I think they're going to like, rather than, you know, and so you can take a lot of randomness out of the sites where people do this, you know, or the top 10 list. Well, you know, if your interests are way out on the edge, if I can figure that out and put something out that's out on the same edge as you, then you're probably going to be happier with the site than having to go digging. You know, it's like that's the next thing. You know, find the task and get the user from there to the goal as fast as possible. And that goes against everything people thought, you know, people have been thinking up till now about, you know, successful web environments. You know, the longer you're on my site, the longer I've trapped you, the better job I'm doing. And really, you know, that may, some users may like surfing sites for hours on end, but probably most don't. And we have to kind of keep rethinking all of those things. And when you do, then the users keep coming back. And they say nice things about you. And they might be the relative of the person who's reviewing your next proposal. So, how are we doing on time? Oh, we're done. Well, thank you all very much. I've made notes, and we'll see how it goes.